You remember that song, and it's always a nice song to listen to. And, well, you and I know the story maybe just a little bit. It's kind of a sad song about a guy that went to a garden party. I had no idea it was so autobiographical, and I didn't know about the garden party per se. Now, Scott Shea, a music historian and the author of All the Leaves Are Brown, a book about the mamas and papas, has a long article, a deep dive into the history of that song and the story of Ricky, and then eventually Rick Nelson. And we've talked to Scott before about stuff like this. Let's do it again. Hey, Scott, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, John, I'm well. Thanks for having me on.
Let's just do it from beginning to end. We'll get to this, the garden party and the song in a minute. But first, who was Ricky Nelson?
Well, Rick was the son of Ozzie and Harriet Nelson, who had a popular television show that started off as a radio serial and came to TV in the early 50s and was on the air for 14 seasons. So we got to watch him grow up. He was from age 12 to age 26. And in between then, he became one of the most popular rock and roll stars on the planet, and released a slew of singles and albums that, you know, I think he was third behind Pat Boone and Elvis Presley as the number of hit records he had between 1957 and 62, and give us some number one hits like Poor Little Fool and Traveling Man, and some classics like Teenage Idol and Young World and mm-hmm. It's Up to You, and just a host of others.
You clarified a couple of things in your story for me. Ozzie and Harriet were actually a married couple, right?
Yes, they were. They married in 1935. He was a band leader, and she was his featured singer.
Right. But I mean, so while we had this radio series and then TV series, I wondered if it was manufactured. But in fact, he really did marry her. They really did have a kid. And then the radio and TV series followed the lives of these people, if I recollect your article correctly, right?
Yeah, I mean, kind of loosely. It was a sitcom, you know, so it was just kind of silly, mundane plot points, but very innocent, very 1950s, Ricky and his older brother David. And Ozzie always looking for Tutti Frutti ice cream, and Ricky and David always trying to impress a college co-ed.
Yeah, right. But it was a real family, and so then they wrote these wacky or silly episodes, and that served as very popular fare in the 1950s. You mentioned that he picked up the guitar and said he was going to, write a song, and a girlfriend said, "You won't be any good at it," or something like that. He took that as a challenge and became a competent singer-songwriter, right?
Yeah, he had been into music. He was dating a girl. He said he was going to make a record because she was really into Elvis Presley, and she loved it. And I guess he was getting a little jealous. And, you know, he came from a musical family, so he had some chops. His mom was a good singer, even though Ozzie was a pretty good singer himself. And, Rick inherited that, and he made a record. And, of course, he had an incredible advantage in having his dad be one of the top entertainment executives in Los Angeles, who was able to, back him on this. And he, they shot them around. They didn't get a lot of takers because it was still kind of the early period of rock and roll, probably a lot of hostility towards it by middle-aged entertainment executives. But, Ozzie saw that this could be a big thing, getting a young, handsome kid like this singing rock and roll in front of an audience every week, an audience of millions of people.
Well, that's it. He not only got him the record deal, but then he had him sing on the TV show, right?
Yeah. Every week, just about. They'd always find a way to crowbar Ricky singing in after something, at the end of the show.
And lo and behold, he becomes what would you call a sensation or a hit? It was very successful for him, right?
Yeah, he became a superstar. I mean, he was an incredibly good-looking kid. The big pompadour, big slick back Hollywood pompadour. His vocals in the beginning were a little stiff, but over time he really got it comfortable with his voice and had a sweet. I know Chris Isaak has described him as just a sweet vocal.
Yeah.
And, just very, very easy on the ears.
And then what happened to him happened to a lot of entertainers of that day. Here come the Beatles. Here come Jerry and the Pacemakers. Here come the Rolling mm-hmm. Stones, right?
Yeah, and it wiped all those guys out pretty much except for Elvis. Even Chuck Berry struggled to get on the charts. And those British artists all, admired him and loved him. So, yeah, you know, so it was a struggle from about 1964 through the late 60s for a lot of those guys to even try to, you know, and they all dealt with it. You know, it was tough on those. And, you know, I think they all thought they were going to be around forever. And here comes this new wave of music and just kind of wiped them all out.
So then there was sort of this nostalgia effort, though, and it was successful. They would do these touring shows that would put some of those 1950s-ish entertainers up. There was still an audience for it, and he was invited to these, but it sounds like he didn't usually go.
Right, yeah. You know, in the early 70s, the Oldies Revival was catching fire, but it was still kind of in its early days. I mean, in a couple of years, it would give us American Graffiti and Happy Days and all those things. You know, for a guy like Ricky, who was trying to stay relevant and trying to claw his way back up, and, you know, he was really kind of a country rock pioneer, you know, it took a lot to get him to do it. And, you know, he finally did it with a guy named Richard Nader, put these things together in New York City. And, you know, it was the seventh one, and he finally got Rick to do it. I think either maybe there was some record company pressure, because it was, you know, it was in Madison Square Garden, the Felt Forum, 5,000 seats. That was a lot of people. That was bigger than the clubs he was playing. And, you know, try to get some new material in, and he did that, and it kind of backfired on him.
Okay, so that's the garden party at Madison Square Garden. And what happens? So Rick Nelson shows up, and he sings. What happens?
Yeah, I think he was the penultimate performer that night. I think Chuck Berry was the headliner, but you know, he went on, didn't look anything like he had on TV. He had that going against him, because, you know, just about everybody in that audience probably had watched an episode of Ozzie and Harriet or two, you know, probably a whole lot more. And you know, he looked different. He was of the time, and so was everybody else, but when you grew up on TV, that kind of goes against you. And, you know, he had updated arrangements to his songs, which I think probably people could forgive, because probably everybody did. But, you know, he started to play some new material. She Belongs to Me was kind of his comeback hit from a couple years earlier as a Bob Dylan song. And nobody was too happy to hear Bob Dylan at a 50s revival. And then they played a version of the Rolling Stones' Honky Tonk Women, you know, which features Alan Kemp, his guitarist, just really shredding the guitar, like kind of like Edgar Winter style throughout the entire song.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, there was also a fight in the back row around the same time that resulted in the police getting involved, and they were starting to get booed. And I think it kind of carried over. I think some of the boos were probably for that fight. I'm sure we've all been to a football stadium or some kind of event where booing starts, and once it catches fire, man, it goes. And I think that's what happened with Rick, and he just took that as a personal slight against him and his performance.
Hmm. You know, it's funny because the lyrics sing, and you said that he didn't look like he used to. When I got to the garden party, they all knew my name, but no one recognized me. I didn't look the same. His hair was longer, and you said he wore bell-bottom jeans, which, you know, wouldn't alienate you that much these days, you know, when you consider how rock and roll stars look, or, you know, how people dress between tattoos and piercings and everything else. It's funny how stiff that audience must have been.
Yeah, for real. And, you know, the funny thing is, probably there was a few of them were probably wearing bell bottoms, you know, and longer hair, you know?
Yeah. So they're booing him. He finishes the set, he walks off, and he says, I'm not doing that again, right?
Yeah, it was, you know, he had done it against his better judgment, and, you know, he went out on a limb, and the limb snapped, you know, and he crashed to the ground. But, you know, he was able to make a lemon, like I say in the article, he was able to make lemonade out of a lemon.
Well, he had a moment then where he wakes up in the middle of the night and runs downstairs. He has the lyrics in his head, and he pens the song, which includes, if you gotta play at garden parties, I wish you a lot of luck, but if memories are all I sang, I'd rather drive a truck. So he didn't want to just keep singing the same old stuff. He had to update himself, and he'd rather drive a truck than just play the same old songs over and over again.
Yeah, you know, and a guy like Ricky Nelson had a lot to prove. I mean, he, you know, he came into the music business with a silver spoon. You know, he had a great advantage, but he was really a talented guy. And then that all kind of got whisked away, like we said, with the British invasion. And he worked really, really hard to get back up, to stay current, and to lift himself out of that. He probably more successful than than any of the other, than many of the other guys, I shouldn't say, or and gals that, that from that era. And, you know, he didn't want to let that go. That was a lot of hard work. And he was, you know, his music from that era, from the 70s, is really very, very good. I would put it up there with a lot of them. And he had a talented band. I mean, Randy Meisner from the Eagles, who went on to join the Eagles, was his bass player and backup singer. So, you know, they were a talented group.
I'll get to that in just a second. But just one last thing then about the chorus. But it's all right now. I learned my lesson well. You see, you can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself. I think that's why that song endures, too, doesn't it? What a great sentiment, so simply put, right?
Yeah, just a great message about just not giving up on who you are and your perseverance. And, you know, it's just a great life lesson for anybody.
Yeah. Here's on page 6 of your story, you mentioned Randy Meisner, who, just listen to this, you wrote, in June, near the end of the sessions, they were recording a song called Rudy the Fifth. That would be the name of a song, or actually an album. In June, near the end of the sessions, Randy Meisner accepted an offer to fill in for Linda Ronstadt's bassist at her gig at Chuck's Cellar in Los Altos, California. Also supporting her that night were two other anonymous LA musicians, one named Glenn Frey on guitar and the other Don Henley on drums. Both had released albums with their respective bands, but they remained struggling musicians seeking their big break. It was the very definition of kismet, you wrote, and the three bonded so well in such a short period of time that by the time Rudy the Fifth overdubs were completed, they're still working on this album, Randy Meisner left to join his new friends and form the Eagles. Who knew? What a lovely story. Well, that's just amazing. It's amazing.
It is. You know, it is. It's kismet. You know, it's amazing how some of these things happen. And, you know, they had Bernie Ledden joined them, and they went out and conquered the world. You know, I mean, and a lot of that country, soft country rock sound that they had came from Randy's own experience with Rick Nelson. I think that helped shape a lot of that early sound.
It's a great song. It's a really fun story. Garden Party Lemonade, The Redemption of Ricky Nelson. I read it from thestrangebrew.co.uk, The Strange Brew, Garden Party Lemonade. Really nice to talk to you again. Scott, keep doing this, and we'll keep telling your stories, okay?
Thanks, John. I appreciate you having me on again.
His book, All the Leaves Are Brown, was a bestseller about the mamas and the papas. Okay, thanks, Pete. Garden Party tells of various people who were present, frequently in an oblique manner. Yoko brought her walrus, refers to Yoko Ono, of course, and John Lennon was the walrus. One more reference in the lyrics pertains in particularly mysterious form. Legendary audience member Mr. Hughes hid in Dylan's shoes wearing his disguise. The Mr. Hughes in question was George Harrison, who was a next-door neighbor and good friend of Nelson. Harrison used Hughes as his traveling alias, and hid in Dylan's shoes most likely refers to an album of Bob Dylan covers that Harrison was planning but never recorded. Okay, I got that too. It's funny, though, because he said, among other things, when Ricky Nelson performed that song, they didn't like it and they didn't even like his appearance. And I said, you know, in this day and age, the way people appear, the hairstyles, the tattoos, the piercings, everything else, it's very strange the way artists and entertainers look.